Hello, everybody, and welcome back to the Go Home Show podcast. My name is Will Brazier. This is Sporf, and it's been another bloody week of professional wrestling. So much has happened, and we're going to break it down for you. We've got weekly chats with WWE superstars coming up. Oh, it's a big one this week. All the news that you might have missed from the previous 7 days, and a look back at some of the most infamous moments in professional wrestling history. Joining me as ever, Elliot Ames, Michael the Crusher Henson, and the returning Chris Anderson, who had one of the worst booked holidays in the history of booked holidays. Isn't that right, Chris?
Yeah, it wasn't the most successful week off in my life, but we're back and we're ready to go.
Yeah. I mean, the wrestling will guide you through, put a smile on your face, but we'll start with five things that you might have missed. And if you missed this, you need to have a long, hard look at yourself in the mirror. Bayley and Sasha Banks, they're friends no more. Bayley's put Sasha, I was going to say on the shelf, she's put her in a hospital bed. It's broken up. It's all about the blue for me, guys. I don't know about you. I was expecting it for maybe to go on a little bit longer, maybe until January. But E-Dog, I'll start with you. They've broken up. Sasha Banks is injured. What did you make of it all?
I kind of agree with you, Will. I personally felt that it could have gone on for a fair bit longer, in my opinion. I like these sort of slow builds with these tag teams or factions or whatever breaking up, as I've mentioned in the past. And unfortunately, they seem to have just kind of jump the gun for the sake of jumping the gun, really. You could maybe argue that the fact that, you know, for a long time they had all of the gold at one time, it was maybe diminishing the women's division because it was just the focus on them for a fair period of time. But either way, I felt there could have been a much more compelling story if they'd had this keep going. I assume the plan is eventually that one of them's going to end up being in the Royal Rumble, because obviously they're probably going to compete for each other probably at some point down the line for the title anyway. So yeah, it just feels like it could still work out to be a great end to a rivalry that just kind of rushed it for me.
Yeah, definitely so, Chris. And I mean, where would you class this? Because I know you don't like two single competitors being tag teams together. They are best friends. Was that enough for you to tip that one over the edge?
Yeah, no, I think with the whole backstory that Sasha and Bayley have, there's no issue with them being a tag team. And I think actually we spoke about it a couple of weeks ago when we were talking about the Shield breaking up, and we were saying how it's better to break a team up too soon rather than too late. So I kind of feel like this is another case of that where, yes, I agree. I believe there probably was more legs in this and they could have run it for another month, 2 months. But if they run it for too long and it kind of petered out and dried out and we're all just sat there going, right, come on then, one of you attack the other one, let's get on with this, I feel like that would have been more detrimental to the feud than breaking them up now.
Then on Monday Night Raw, there was another friendship broken. Cedric Alexander has turned his back on Ricochet. God, I can't believe it. And he's joined the Hurt Business. Crush, you're nodding away there. You're like a cat that got the milk. You must be happy with that one.
Yeah, obviously I spoke, I think, maybe even on the first episode about how I wanted Shelton Benjamin to go on to win titles as part of the Hurt Business. And now I've got an even more talented member. So yeah, Cedric Alexander, obviously, he's been tapped up for a few weeks now like MVP, and he finally gave in. Obviously, there was sort of a bit of doubt about it, because obviously he was attacked pre-match before the six-man tag by MVP, Bobby Lashley and Shelton Benjamin. But then the babyfaces made the save, and then obviously had the six-man tag with Apollo Crews and Ricochet before he turned on Ricochet, gave Apollo Crews a lumbar check, and then, yeah, he's part of the Hurt Business. He's got the T-shirt, and he looks the business. I'm really looking forward to seeing where this storyline takes them.
I'm excited by the Hurt Business, but as you were speaking, Crush, I was thinking, if Bobby Lashley's got the United States title, has that almost put a ceiling on the group, Chris, saying this is just going to be a mid-card faction?
No, I wouldn't say so. I think having a title on someone in the faction gives the faction legitimacy. I think it shows that they are champion material, and that they, especially when you kind of look at the point of the faction, is to elevate people who've kind of been stuck in the mid-card for a little bit. I think bringing all these people together, especially with Cedric Alexander, who we know is probably one of, if not the most underrated for his in-ring talent going. Like, he does struggle on the mic sometimes. I think he still needs to find his own voice, his own personality. I think having this kind of leadership, this mentorship within the faction will be a huge boost to him, and they can all help each other. The one that actually really reminded me of was, again, we've spoken about this recently because we bring everything together, when we talk about Evolution in the past and how that was essentially created to build up Randy and to build up Batista. We can look at this now, and this is a faction that essentially is designed to build up Cedric Alexander. Like the three others together, all of them are established enough. Yes, they kind of didn't really have a purpose beforehand, and MVP has been the catalyst or the linchpin that's brought them all together. But I think just this in itself, having a title on them gives them legitimacy, but it also gives them a real opportunity to raise each other up, but especially the younger, less experienced member.
Shelton Benjamin's definitely going to be the first one kicked out of that. We spoke a lot about tag teams, and one team that have not broken up, but one man that's gone on his own way, and he's gone his own way in quite some style. Jey Uso will be taking on Roman Reigns at Clash of Champions. E-Dog, if you'd have given me £10, I would not have put it on Jey Uso in that fatal four-way match.
I mean, there was better odds when Leicester City won the league, wasn't there? I mean, this is absolutely mad. Jey Uso is fighting for the Universal title against his cousin, I want to say, Roman Reigns. I mean, but this is great. This is what you want to see on shows like SmackDown. You want to see kind of the land of opportunity, as they were using a lot a couple of years ago. I like seeing people being given main event chances. Do I think he's going to win? Probably not. The only problem with this, because I've seen a few people on Reddit, on Twitter, saying, oh, this is just going to lead to, as we were mentioning the other week, Reigns having like a faction, is just going to lead to Jey end up probably like laying down, taking the pin, and that's it. Hopefully not as bad as that. Personally, I hope they go no way near that, because as I mentioned last week, Roman Reigns doesn't need a faction. He's a big, strong dog, and he's got Paul Heyman. He doesn't need anything else. I am damn sure that Jey Uso is going to pull off an amazing performance. I mean, the Usos in general, I mean, that war they had with the New Day a couple of years ago was arguably the highlight of that year. I'm sure he's going to continue that great chemistry against Roman Reigns. It's going to probably be a really fun match. And also, it's just going to make Roman look like an absolute badass when he destroys him at the end of the day.
Yeah, and to be fair to WWE, it's just built excitement, isn't it? Going into that Clash of Champions, there could have been a few that, like, even, say, Matt Riddle got it, he'd have probably lost, which isn't great for him. But that match now is very intriguing, isn't it?
Yeah, but again, I think...
Here we go.
Yeah, so I messaged Chris straight away and I was saying that I think it'll go down that Kevin Nash route, just because they're trying to make Roman this big heel. That's going to get more fans to absolutely hate him. But like Elliot said, they don't really need it. But again, I hope that they do a big swerve on us and they produce an amazing match that carries Jey Uso right into that upper card limit. As Elliot said, we saw how good they both can be during that feud in New Day. I'm not too sure how long Jimmy's out for, but it'll be certainly good to see him get a well-deserved push on his own.
I think either way, we can all agree we are intrigued. Speaking of intrigued, Chris Anderson, there's a new man on the AEW roster. I think he's a part-time Twitcher, sometime professional wrestler. Wrestler? Fantastic stuff. It is. The new name is Miro.
Yeah, it is. It's Miro Day on AEW. And I think this is one of those signings that everyone knew was coming, despite how hard he tried to make it seem like it wasn't. I mean, it was about a month ago that he said that he was done with professional wrestling and that he was now a full-time streamer. I think precisely zero people believed him. I think a lot of people expected him to be the Joker in the buy-in battle royal at All Out on Saturday. That ended up being Matt Sydal. That went interestingly for him, if you haven't seen it, it's probably going to be one of the most famous botches in wrestling history for a long time. Go check it out. I found it very interesting that they decided to bring him in this week. Now, that may have always been the plan, but obviously it's been a difficult week for AEW. There was the Matt Hardy injury. There was the Evan Bourne debut that didn't go to plan. All Out was a very mixed pay-per-view for what is meant to be their big show of the year. I think bringing in a big name like Rusev or Miro, that is a fan favourite, especially an internet wrestling fan favourite, I think is a good move to kind of steer the narrative and steer the headlines back to where AEW want them to be.
Just on that Matt Hardy incident as well, obviously there was a lot of talk and speculation around it. When he went down, there was a clear concussion, the match carried on. Obviously, being a wrestler yourself, how did you think the whole incident was dealt with?
Oh, terribly, personally, if I'm honest. Like, so for me, and this is me as a wrestler, the point of the referee is to be like, it's essentially to quarterback a match. Like, that's their job. If a referee says, we're stopping the match, you stop the match. Like, it's just the easiest thing to do. Because as much as of anything, forgetting concussion protocols and second hit syndrome and all this kind of stuff, in the world of kayfabe, if a referee can stop the match and then the wrestler says, no, I'm fine, let's carry on, then the referee doesn't have any power. The referee has no authority. If the referee's decision is final, then if the referee says we're stopping the match, you stop the match. Then add on to that, obviously, the science within concussion has greatly increased and improved like tenfold over the last decade. We know more and more about it. It's at the end of the day, it's someone's brain. Let's just play it safe. Even if, as the, apparently the test came back to say he wasn't concussed, let's just play it safe. Like, again, forget everything else. Forget spin and PR and all this stuff. Let's just play it safe and say there's a risk he concussed. It's a risk, like, his health is at jeopardy here. Let's just stop the match. It's one match. I know it's their biggest pay-per-view. I know it's a big feud. I know they want to do all these things. But at the end of the day, people are now only going to remember that pay-per-view for that moment. Whereas if they stop the match, the chances are everyone will be talking about Kenny Omega turning on Hangman Page or John Moxley and MJF putting on a slobber knocker, for want of no better word. Like, but the narrative coming out of that was Matt Hardy's injury.
Just to finish off this week of professional wrestling, we have a new NXT champion. It is the Prince. Elliot, are you elated, happy, sad? What are your thoughts?
The Prince is now the king, and I am very happy to see Finn Balor actually become the NXT champion again. This is absolutely fantastic. It's a complete throwback to a few years ago when we had such hope in the world before he ended up breaking his shoulder and that hope had gone. Fantastic match, as expected. You know, Super Tuesday 2, Electric Boogaloo went off without a hitch. I was incredibly pleased with it. And the fact that Adam Cole had been targeting the leg of Balor, which meant that he wasn't going to finish with a coup de grace, was a really good surprise for me, because I still felt going into it at the end he was going to do that. The fact that he didn't adds a bit more of a oh my god moment to it. I think this adds a lot of legitimacy to NXT because he is a big name brand. As Chris mentioned with the likes of Rusev, the fact that he is one of these internet fan favourites, you know, which is, let's say it bluntly, the majority of people who watch NXT, this is really good. I think it also opens the door, potentially, as I mentioned last week, to Mr. Anderson's theory that was going around regarding Adam Cole and Finn Balor. It could still happen. In fact, Chris, what do you think of that? Do you think that theory could still potentially happen?
So I'm very, very on the fence a bit. And I believe me, no one is unhappier to say that than me, because I want to be right all the time. The only reason I'm not sure it'll happen was actually more to do with the exchange that you see after the match, which WWE were very keen to push on the socials, on the internet, where you have like the too sweet moment in the back with William Regal and Triple H and whoever else was back there. It seemed very kind of face versus face. Now, it may well be they may do a twist, or they may do a turn or whatever. I actually think it's more likely, if they are looking at breaking up the Undisputed Era, which I think is a bad move personally, but if that's what they want to do, I think it will be Kyle O'Reilly that actually turns face, because we've seen him be less willing to attack people afterwards and do the beatdowns recently. He is the natural face out of the group, in my opinion, because he is, again, he's an internet fan favourite. He's a good comedy wrestler. But again, I still want to be right. So next week, you'll see Finn Balor attack Adam Cole and everything's right in the world, because Chris Anderson was once again correct with one of his predictions.
Well, there were some predictions and fantasy bookings, but leads us nicely on to convince me now. Each week, we will bring something to the table and do a bit of fantasy booking ourselves. NXT UK is booting back up very soon. The BT Arena looks absolutely fantastic, and I'm very excited to get back into it. But Walter's the champion at the moment. He holds the belt. But, ladies and gentlemen, who do we think will be his first challenger? Chris, I'll come to you, because you're first on my sheet.
So mine actually isn't a current member of the NXT UK roster. I'm going to throw it back to almost the point of why NXT UK was created, which was to give a real corporate promotion to British wrestling. Now, obviously, a lot of the top talent that came through NXT UK to start off with is now starting to look like it's going over to NXT. You look at the likes of Grizzled Young Vets with Zach and James Drake were appearing on NXT before lockdown happened. I think Tyler Bate, Pete Dunne and Trent Seven have had about 17 different last matches on NXT UK, each time teasing that they're going over before coming out, going over and coming back. So I would look for there to be an influx of new talent coming in. In my opinion, within the UK and even the European wrestling scene, there is only one big man wrestler who has not only the ability, but the reputation to take on Volta off the bat, and that would be Mr. Rampage Brown. Now, for those of you who are not familiar with him, I really recommend you go find him on YouTube. He did a lot of work with WCPW and Defiant before those kind of wound down. He is actually a former WWE superstar. Not many people know that. He was with... So he was on ECW for one episode, losing to Mark Henry. He was actually at FCW, which is the old NXT UK. The old NXT. He left there. He's done a lot of work with Progress, Rev Pro, ICW. If you're not into the British wrestling indie scene, Rampage Brown is the man. Like, he is the big dog of indie wrestling within the UK. Check him out. If he comes to NXT UK, in my opinion, it would be as big a signing as when they brought in Walter. And that is why he should be the first manager to challenge Walter when they come back after lockdown in September, whenever it is, because I don't think they've given us a date yet.
Love that. I see what Chris is doing. He's throwing it out and he's just waiting for that to be clipped up when he's right, drop the big retweet and say, come and have a listen to this podcast. I never get it wrong. Crush, I'll move on to you. Who do you think should challenge Walter for the first time when we get back at NXT UK?
Just to add on to Chris's point, in Progress, Rampage had one of the best theme songs ever. It's Hatebreed, I Will Be Heard. So go and listen to that as well. But anyway, beside my point, I put a joke on to start with being Anderson Daniels, because I'd love to see Chris get his ass kicked.
And well, happen, I'm sure.
Firstly, I have no interest in wrestling Walter, because that guy's terrifying. Secondly, don't do singles. Thirdly, I'd take the payday, yeah, so it's worth it.
No, my answer is Ilya Dragunov. I remember seeing Ilya's comeback for WXW in Germany, and honestly, it is one of the
Christ,
best.
That is a where's what's that?
The scene. It was on YouTube.
Right. I thought that was one of your ones. I was actually there in Berlin on the.
He had a head injury, and there was like no room for him coming back. And then Walter is in a challenging the WXW champion at the time. His name I can't remember, but it's something Bones. And he goes, oh, this is now a three-way dance. And Ilya Dragunov comes out to the biggest pop ever. I'll send it everyone later. But yeah, make sure you check it out on YouTube. But yeah, he's incredibly talented. I'd love to see him go one-to-one in NXT UK for the title. They've had matches before. They can absolutely throw it down. Obviously, he had ring camp for Imperium with Marcel Breffer. As he's now known in NXT. They've had some great matches over in WXW. They've had matches over here. Obviously, Dragunov went 30 minutes with Cesaro at NXT TakeOver Cardiff. He can perform. I want him to be Walter's next challenger and the next NXT UK champion.
Nice. E-Dog, what are you saying?
Well, I'm going for kind of a bland and predictable sort of prediction as to who I think he should be facing. And I'm doing a little bit of a curveball because I'm going for challengers and not just plural. I personally think, as Chris mentioned before, that the likes of Trent Seven, Tyler Bay and Pete Dunne have had probably, as he says, 17, 18, 19, 20 times where it looks like they're going to finally leave NXT UK. But I think with the current travel bans that are going on and the fact that I believe they are in the UK as of right now because Pete Dunne was on NXT, hasn't been seen for a while since. So I'm just assuming that. I want to see them both go in against Walter in the idea of they're going to fight together. It'll still be a triple threat match, but they're going in as British Strong Style versus Walter. And there's two possible ways we could do this, because I think Walter should either keep the belt or drop the belt in one way or another. The way I would think he should keep the belt is through Tyler Bate turning on Pete Dunne and siding with Imperium, which I think is the better option. The other one would be he turns on Pete Dunne and just wins the belt, which I don't think adds too much of a story. I like seeing Walter as champion. I think Tyler Bate is, he's not only the future of British wrestling, he could arguably be the future of wrestling in general. He's like, what, only 21, 22? He's ridiculously young. When I interviewed him in person, his thighs are bigger than my bloody face. Like, the man is just absolutely ripped to shit. He was the youngest ever champion in WWE history. I think him siding with Walter and Imperium, he could be kind of like the Randy Orton of that group, which, and maybe also leading to a Batista storyline later going on at the NXT takeovers next year. I think that leads to a really compelling storyline because Walter is eventually going to lose the belt. We all know this. I think even though he doesn't want to go on the main roster or go on to regular NXT, I think eventually he will because he's just, he's so dominant and he's so great in NXT UK that I would love to see him on there. So I'm saying Tyler Bate and Pete Dunne with a little turn on each other happening.
Like that, some big shouts. I've put on mine, I've gone for Zach Gibson. Now, I know this would mean it would sort of be heel versus heel, but we've mentioned already the NXT and NXT UK audience are very smart. They're internet fans. And I sort of feel with Walter, he's almost like their pin-up boy, especially with that theme tune. You can't help sing along to it when he does walk out. And I think Zach Gibson, when he's in prime heel mode, can still generate that fan reaction of people booing him. When I've seen him on the mic at different events, he's an absolute bastard. And I think that would be one of the nicest things I could say about him. He sort of flirted with that. He did have one main event match, didn't he, against for the title. Obviously didn't come up props. Been flirting with NXT, but I think that's quite fluid between the two brands at the moment. So I'd just like to see him come back. And we've thrown out a few bold predictions and factions. I was thinking, he's not being used the best, and he has got a contract, and he has been on this podcast, but Drake Maverick, I just feel there's something in him, but Zach Gibson for me to fight Walter would be a humdinger. So, ladies and gentlemen, we have given our bold predictions, some bolder than others, but what would you like to see? Who would you like to see Walter fight in that very first title match for the NXT UK title? If you're watching us on YouTube, get involved in the comments, but if you're listening, come over to our Twitter and drop us a little tweet.
The Thunderdome is well and truly underway and will be spoilt with another pay-per-view in just over 2 weeks' time as Clash of Champions comes live from the Amway Centre in Orlando. And how better to enjoy watching along than with the company of some fresh and delicious beer from all over the globe. There's no need to worry about heading to the shops to stock up. Beer 52 will bring the beer to you. They're offering a free, yes, free case of 8 craft beers sourced and curated from the best breweries on the planet. All you need to do is go to www.beer52.com/thegohomeshow and cover $5.95 for postage. Each case is delivered direct to your doorstep, so no need to leave the house. Looking to stock up? Now is your chance. Beer 52 is the world's most popular craft beer discovery club with over 150,000 members that they send a brand new case to every month. Each month's case has a different theme. Past themes have included beer from New Zealand, from South Africa, from Korea, and from all over the US and Europe. So that's beer52.com. That's the word beer, then the numbers 52.com/thegohomeshow for free, yes, free beer.
And now we are moving on to Room 101. Every week, a different member of the panel will bring with them one thing from the world of magnificent professional wrestling that they'd like to get rid of forever. They present it to the group. If it enters Room 101, it's gone forever. If not, we have to continue with them, unfortunately. Each week, we'll update the list of what is and what isn't going from wrestling. And this week, returning Chris will be the judge of what goes in. And obviously, we had the reigning, defending Room 101 champion, Elliot, from last week. The first person to get something in Room 101. Elliot, what was it again? Remind the audience.
It was tag teams breaking up just for the sake of tag teams breaking up. Not only does that make me the inaugural Room 101 champion, I'm also the inaugural quiz champion, making me the inaugural champ of the Go Home Show podcast. You heard it here first, ladies and gentlemen.
Chris just cut that part, yeah. So Will is banned from this week. So it is myself going up against the reigning, defending, undisputed Room 101 champion, the double champ, the inaugural champ, with my Room 101 point this week is inconsistent finishes. So we have seen in the past where moves, for example, Shawn Michaels' sweet chin music, many wrestlers used super kick, and it never ends a match. Therefore, in my opinion, it devalues the sweet chin music when it happens. Look at Dolph Ziggler, look at Young Bucks in AEW and NJPW, where they are around the world. We see so many moves that are used for finishers that are then used as normal moves that never end the match. Added on to that, like this, the finisher is supposed to be the build-up of the whole match. It could be 10 minutes, could be 20 minutes, could be 30 minutes. Your finisher is supposed to be used to end the match. And yeah, I get occasionally getting kicked out of to like build crowd suspense, etc. But the amount of times a finisher does not end the match is just ridiculous. And I believe inconsistent finishers should be in-room 101. And if you hit your finisher 99% of the time, it should end the match.
Well, to rebuttal that, Crush, I personally think that when another superstar copies a finishing move and calls it into maybe a standard move, shall we call it, throughout the match, that only goes to show and bolster the fact that the original wrestler can pull it off the best. When you see Shawn Michaels do a switch in music, you know he's the king of the superkick. Therefore, everybody else trying to do it is simply imitating and trying to pay tribute to him. They're never going to be as good as him with that specific finishing move. You mentioned the Young Bucks. Superkick isn't their finishing move. So I don't know why you're trying to infer that it is. It's just something that they use in their arsenal. Same with the likes of Kevin Owens using the Stone Cold Stunner. He's never going to do it as good as Stone Cold Steve Austin because it's kind of in the name, isn't it? So for me, I don't really have a problem when you use that, because to say it bluntly, it just ends up making the original move look so good. I do agree that finishers, when used, should be 99% of the time, should end. However, I'd like to think that WWE in particular does that quite well. You look at the F5, for example, with Brock Lesnar. That is the most protected move, I would argue, in professional wrestling. And normally, the only times where he does more than one F5, it's because he doesn't want to pin the guy. He just wants to beat the crap out of him, like he did against Roman Reigns at WrestleMania a few years ago. But I think the beautiful thing about the inconsistency is that it also can bring in the idea of this wrestler can do different types of moves. They can have a submission move. They can have a shock move. They can have a high fly move. They don't just have to have their standard finisher. So you are robbing them of that opportunity, Crush, to grow as a wrestler, to have that complete arsenal to make themselves a better superstar. So I vehemently disagree with you on this point.
So to go back on your point, I wasn't saying the Young Bucks using it as finishers. I'm just saying they're using it. There's some people who use the super kick. I mean, Chris will probably try and use the super kick at one point, and it's never going to end a match.
Like, he's not implied it.
If I super kick someone, they ain't getting up again. There's zero chance if I go for a super kick, they're going to stand back up on their feet.
Well, the amount of times that we've seen a finishing move hit and it's a two count, or I know sometimes a one count, but then Goldberg does a bad suplex and he pins the Fiend. It's so inconsistent, and I don't like the fact that, say, if a wrestler has hit it three times, like by the time a feud has ended, they could have hit that 15 times and probably hit one win, say, at the pay-per-view at the end. Like, Chris, what's your finisher?
My finisher is a stretch muffler.
Okay, so if Chris uses that,
Just very quickly, Crush, what's a stretch muffler?
I don't know.
You've no clue, do you?
Probably Big E's move that he used the other week.
It's the submission move, yeah. It's the Brock Lock.
Okay. So if people kept getting out of that, it therefore devalues Chris's finishing move, and I'd say he's a bad wrestler. But he's not a bad wrestler, are you, Chris?
No, I am.
I would interject with that point, though, that you can definitely use the idea of having your finisher multiple times in a match purely if the storyline dictates that it hasn't been done properly. So there's an injury or something that's stopping them from doing it fully. So I think that more so falls down to the actual storyline of the match more than anything else. So for me, I think you're being just a little bit nitpicky here, Crush, if I'm being honest.
So the point I'm going to make is, and actually this is, I can't remember who I heard this from, but it was on a seminar that was on YouTube. And my question to you is this, Crush. What is AJ Styles' finisher?
Styles Clash or Phenomenal Forearm. Probably a Styles Clash, Phenomenal Forearm, more of a...
Styles Clash. How many times have you seen the Styles Clash kicked out of since he's been at WWE?
No idea.
It happens fairly frequently because Styles Clash is not a finisher. In the same way, actually, that Phenomenal Forearm is not actually a finisher. And this is a real concept. So the example I use is Al Snow because he's the best example of this. Al Snow, everyone says that Al Snow's finisher is the snowplow. People kicked out the snowplow all the time. Now, you say all the time. I'm not saying like every week someone would kick out the snowplow, but it was frequently kicked out of. His finisher was when he'd hit someone with plank of wood, but he'd still win matches with a snowplow. Just because you have a move that finishes a match, that doesn't make it the finisher. If someone kicks out of your finisher consistently enough, i.e. once a year, that is not something where the crowd know that's the end of the match. you see a phenomenal forearm, you think it's the end of the match, but there's that part of your brain that goes, people have kicked out of this before. They might. This might happen right now. Same with Stars Clash. Same with, I mean, the most recent example that is spammed to death is John Cena and the Attitude Adjuster. Okay, he hit that so often, and that was a finish for a bit. And then it took two to kick out, and it took three to kick out, and then the punch to the face happened, and it was the greatest finish of all time. The idea that finishes still exist today isn't really a thing. Actually, they just have their main near fall, and that wins them a lot of matches. So this is why Crush, and as soon as I saw your thing go on the sheet, you could have said anything you wanted. You could have put together the most perfectly executed argument of all time, and I still was going to disagree with you. But because you're hanging on to this notion that finishes really are still a thing, when you've also said that wrestling has moved on from what it used to be back in the 80s and 90s, is why this will never ever enter Room 101, and next week you have to keep your mouth shut.
Lovely old stuff. Right, we are moving on to the quiz. Last time it was me setting the tone, and we did Iron Man matches, which gave us all the surprise answer that Jimmy Wang Yang was, of course, in an Iron Man match. Crush won, so he's setting the tone this week. We will, of course, go around the houses to see who can post the biggest numbers. Where are we going? What's the topic?
So the topic is, I mean, we've spoke about it a lot this week.
Oh.
NXT wrestlers, both male and female, how many can you name in 60 seconds?
Well, you know what? I'm going to start the ball low. I'm going to say 10.
Elliot?
I'll say 11.
Will?
14.
Chris?
15.
Elliot?
Can't do more than 15.
Will?
I'm not confident in 15.
Do you know what 14? It is? It's just because there's so much to-ing and throwing.
Well, can I have a 16 from you?
No.
No, so it's 15. 15 male.
Oh, I've made such a mistake here.
Yeah. I'm going to write these down and go back and check them. Yep. Name 15 NXT wrestlers in 16 seconds, starting now.
Okay, we have got Johnny Gargano. We have got Ciampa. We've got Karrion Kross. Or Killer. Karrion Kross, he's known him. Scarlett, Finn Balor, Adam Cole, Kyle O'Reilly. Maya Yim, Tegan Nox. Oh, I've already said Adam Cole. I'm in a bad spot right now. Oh, who's in the ladder match? Io Shirai.
Yeah.
Dakota Kai.
Yeah.
I'm so bad at wrestling. Shut up.
9, 8.
Pete Dunne, Tyler 7. Bate. Trent Seven, they've all been on NXT. Fabian Aichner, Martel Barthel. Walter, he's been on NXT.
Ref.
You got it.
What, NXT? Walter?
He got that before.
What, Tyler Bate, Pete Dunne? Pete Dunne, yeah. Tyler Bate, no.
Tyler, they've been NXT tag champions. Yeah. You put some respect on their name.
Johnny Gargano, Tommaso Ciampa, Karrion Kross, Scarlett, Finn Balor, Adam Cole, Kyle O'Reilly, Miriam, Tegan Nox, Io Shirai, Dakota Kai, Pete Dunne, and the former NXT Tag Team Champions, the members of Imperium, Marcel Bruffel and Fabian Aichner. So, I can quickly run through the list if you want, so you can get some out. Big ones you missed out, Austin Theory, Bobby Fish, Bronson Reed, Cameron Grimes, Damian Priest, Dominik Djokovic, Fandango.
Velveteen!
Yeah, Fandango, Tyler Breeze, Killian Dane, Kushida, Pat McAfee, Roderick Strong.
He's on your picture.
I'm going to say Pat McAfee's a stretch.
I mean, Candice LeRae, Rhea Ripley.
I am finally a winner of the quiz. I will admit in controversial circumstances because I was just shouting syllables by the end in the hope that I might squeeze through. But the referee, in his wisdom, and as we've already discussed, the referee's word should be final. Please respect the referee. So I will be doing the quiz next week. And my gosh, we could go anywhere with this. I am excited for this. I'm going to go left field with this, and you will all have no clue where we're going to go.
Right, it's time to bring some more star power to this podcast, if that's possible, with Chris Anderson on here. I sat down with Adam Cole a couple of weeks ago and had a fantastic chat, and you can hear it right now. How are you anyway? You all good?
I'm doing good. Everything all right with you?
Yeah, I'm all good, mate. Yeah, we've actually got sun in Manchester, so it's very rare. But
Beautiful.
Whereabouts are you based?
Orlando. So we got hot sun every day.
Oh, mate, I could, this complexion couldn't deal with that. It'd be terrible.
Hey, me too. I'm actually not. I'm very, I burn very easily. I got to be careful. Yeah.
That factor 50. I was watching the WWE Network this week and I saw Ricochet speaking about your rivalry and saying how much fun it was. What's been your best rivalry so far down in NXT?
Oh, you know, that's a tough one because I really do like the one with Ricochet. Me and Aleister Black had a good little series. You know, but with Tommaso, I really enjoyed the recent thing we had. But I would say probably my favorite set of matches is the feud with Johnny Gargano for so many reasons. You know, number one, that wasn't supposed to happen. At least at that time, you know, they were Johnny Gargano and Tommaso Ciampa were in this deep feud that was supposed to end. And then Tommaso unfortunately needed to get neck surgery. So everyone was kind of scrambling, like, what are we going to do WrestleMania weekend? What are we going to do? We need to have a big match, but we don't know what to do. So the decision was made. All right, let's do Adam Cole versus Johnny Gargano. And me and Johnny have known each other for 10 years. We'd been saying since I got to NXT, oh man, I can't wait till they pull the trigger. I can't wait till they do the Adam Cole versus Johnny Gargano match. And we wanted it to happen. We just didn't expect it to happen there. So we knew that because so many eyes were on us, we're like, okay, they're finally getting the match. We got to make it count. Let's, you know, we got to have this crazy, awesome match or just try our best to. And fortunately, it went really well. And a lot of people really, really enjoyed it. And just he's one of the most, talented guys I've ever wrestled. So getting to do all three of those matches with him were just very special to me. And I'm going to remember them for the rest of my life.
We spoke about rivalries that you've had. Obviously, looking forward, we've got a different year ahead of us. But is there people currently on Raw and SmackDown that you'd love to see come down to the NXT and take on the Undisputed Era?
Yeah, so personally, for me specifically, as far as like the faction, I would love the chance to get to wrestle New Day in NXT. I feel like that would be great. We teased it a little bit with the Survivor Series build up on Raw and SmackDown, but getting to do like a proper match with those guys, I think would be really cool. And then as far as me individually, I would love for AJ Styles to come down to NXT. And me getting the chance to wrestle him one more time. I'd wrestled him before on the independents. I wasn't successful. I feel like I'm a different man now. So I feel like Adam Cole versus AJ Styles would be in NXT at like a takeover or even on TV. Ooh, I would love it. I would love the chance to wrestle Triple H. Funny enough, I did an interview a little bit ago where someone had asked me, or I thought they had asked me if I would love to wrestle Triple H. And I said, yeah, of course. But it was twisted into, I want to retire Triple H.
Oh, I did that.
Yeah, no, I know. But just for the record, I would love to wrestle Triple H. Never said I want to retire the man. Definitely don't want to retire Triple H.
Amazing. Thanks, Adam. Thank you very much.
Of course,
man. So that was just a snippet of it. If you want to hear the full thing, go to Sporf Wrestling so you can see my full interview with Adam Cole and let us know who you'd like to see us interview next. Go to @GoHomeShowPod and drop us a suggestion. Right, gents, it's time to finish the show. It's nearly time to go home, but as always, we'll have a little retro recap. Elliot, and I believe you've been studying away on the network for a rivalry that has been nearly a decade long now?
Yeah, it's been a very, very long time coming. With the news recently that Brock Lesnar is now a free agent from the WWE, I decided to look back to the last time, as far as I'm aware, that he was a free agent from the WWE, and the rivalry that he left out on, which of course was against Goldberg. Now, this rivalry started at Survivor Series 2003, where Lesnar was the WWE champion and basically stated, I can beat anybody, no one can beat me, only for Goldberg to interrupt him during this little backstage segment, you know, kind of laying out that potentially something might happen. We then go to the Royal Rumble of 2004. Brock Lesnar is in a fairly boring match against Hardcore Holly, but defends the title. And Goldberg ends up entering the Royal Rumble at number 30. You know, potentially these guys could be facing off at WrestleMania. Instead, Lesnar comes in and absolutely wrecks Goldberg, costing him of his shot to be at the main event on the grandest stage of them all. Meanwhile, Lesnar was going into his next feud in the WWE Championship against the greatest wrestler of all time, in my humble opinion, Latino Heat, Eddie Guerrero, where that would culminate at No Way Out 2004. And it's my favorite match of all time. I don't care what people think. It's the greatest moment in wrestling history for me. Because Goldberg ends up interrupting that title match, spearing Lesnar, leading Eddie Guerrero to lie, cheat, and steal his way, not only to the WWE title, but also to our hearts, I'd like to think, at the same time. The following night on Monday Night Raw, it's revealed that Stone Cold Steve Austin himself was the guy who suggested to Goldberg, hey, you should go and go No Way Out. You should do a little hijinks, and even gave him a ticket to appear in the audience. This then led to Lesnar taking Austin's ATV, which he was riding around for some reason at this point. And then Vince McMahon decided, right, we're going to have an inter-brand Clash of the Titans match between these two with Stone Cold Steve Austin as the special guest referee. It's going to be Goldberg, Brock Lesnar, WrestleMania 20. Now, I'm going to ask you guys for your opinions on this match at WrestleMania 20. There's going to be a few times I'm going to do this, but what do you guys make of what I would arguably call maybe the worst WrestleMania match of all time? I'll start off with Chris. What did you think of it?
I'm going to give you a one-word review because I am a man of few words. I know I don't like to waffle on. My one-word review for this match is poo. You can tell that both wrestlers, their hearts were not in this match at all. And the fact that it was a match between two of the probably the most gifted physical freaks within the company, potentially not the best wrestlers, but Brock Lesnar is a freak. Goldberg was a freak. And you had Stone Cold, i.e. the biggest star, arguably the WWE has produced within WWE, not looking outside of what they've done in pop culture. And for it to be that bad is honestly impressive.
It's remarkable, isn't it? Especially when, as you were alluding to, both men's contracts were ending on this day. This was going to be their last matches, arguably ever in WWE. Nobody knew where their careers were going to go. I mean, Crush, I'll go with you. The crowd reaction at Madison Square Garden is, I'd argue, probably the most volatile I've seen in around Mania weekend. Maybe when, didn't you see Roman Reigns get booed the following night after WrestleMania? It was kind of that sort of vibe, though. You know, probably even worse because these are just, the fans just hate him. I mean, what did you think of it?
Yeah, I mean, to echo Chris's thoughts, it just wasn't good. The crowd in New York, like, no matter what sport it is, they're very passionate, they're very loud, and they made sure their thoughts were known. And I mean, this is a time that the internet was sort of starting to bring out the rumours and whatnot. So obviously fans have started to hear about them both leaving. Obviously Lesnar wanted to go out to the NFL. To put it nicely, it was a beep show.
Yeah, it wasn't a good match. It was a terrible match. And for anybody who doesn't remember how it ended, Goldberg won, apparently. But the moment everybody seems to really remember was Stone Cold Steve Austin giving them both some stunners and basically telling them sayonara as they were both leaving the company. And that would kind of be that. Goldberg would try to have an acting career. We'd obviously know with Brock Lesnar, he'd go and do UFC. He tried out for NFL again, I'm pretty sure. All that fun stuff. And then Brock Lesnar came back into the WWE and is arguably more vicious now in the ring than he's ever been. And then we're leading up to the new release at the time of WWE 2K17. Now, we've seen video games have an impact on the programming we see. Most notably, it was when Sting ended up making his debut at, I believe it was Survivor Series 2014, I want to say. And he was either a pre-order bonus or he was the cover star that year. And so that led a few people kind of thinking, well, if Goldberg is the cover star, you know, why don't we do something about this? Why don't we have him face Lesnar again? Because that's the one blemish on Brock Lesnar's incredible career in WWE is the fact that he lost to Goldberg. He's never beaten him. You can argue, I mean, I would argue he's one of the best wrestlers of all time, Brock Lesnar. He is an absolute giant of the industry. And that then speculation led to the match actually culminating in the main event at Survivor Series 2016. A fairly good show, in my personal opinion. And we got onto the main event, and oh my God! What the hell happened? It was one of the most craziest scenes I'd ever seen. If you haven't seen it, he just destroys Brock Lesnar. Goldberg looks like he's straight out of WCW in the late 90s. He is ripped to hell. There's finishers straight away from him. Lesnar looks shocked. Heyman looks like he's having a panic attack. It is absolutely fantastic. Will, what did you think of that moment when it happened?
to watch Goldberg wrestle, now that I'm a bit older, some would say wiser, others would argue maybe not, is a spectacle in itself, but for all the wrong reasons. So for as much as it's great to see these two go at each other, the shorter it can be and the more finishes, which you think he perfected by now, I just really don't like watching Goldberg. So I'm sorry, mate, but it's just not fun.
I mean, in my personal opinion, though, at this point, because this was the first time we'd seen him in a fair few years, it hadn't really gotten, you could argue, maybe a bit stale with some of the matches we have later on. But it was a bit of a shock to the system, you guys have to admit. I mean, Lesnar was looking completely dominant. He wasn't champion at this point, but we all kind of suspected he's going to be champion at some point. And for him to lose clean as well, no interference, I don't think we've seen that in a very long time against the Beast. So that then leads to them mouthing off each other, you know, building up the idea of another match going on. And they both end up entering at the Royal Rumble shortly thereafter. And in a role reversal, it was Goldberg who took out Lesnar and therefore set up, as we all kind of suspected was going to happen, they were going to be facing at WrestleMania. But a few twists and turns, which in my personal opinion were twists and turns for the worst, ended up happening on the way to that, which was that the best storyline of that year, arguably the best storyline of the past decade, the Festival of Friendship,
oh,
yeah. Kevin Owens and Chris Jericho ended up being interrupted via that, with Goldberg beating Kevin Owens after, I think it was like 2 or 3 seconds, because Chris Jericho had distracted him as the bell was going to be rung at Fastlane that year, which meant we were going to see, for the WWE Universal title, Brock Lesnar versus Goldberg. And, well, I could tell you about the match, but as I'm sure you guys are aware, one person was there. Crush, what did you think of that Clash of the Titans, the Godzilla versus King Kong of that WrestleMania?
I mean, I actually really enjoyed the match. I think it went like 5 minutes, but straight out of the bat, there's action. There's Brock jumping over Goldberg's spear, because, again, he's just an absolute freak athlete who could even do that at that size, something that Chris would probably do. But, yeah, going into it, I went with 3 friends, so we were a bit hesitant. We thought Goldberg might go through Brock straight away again, like he'd done at Survivor Series. So to see how it started and how it went on, and it was the story was perfectly told in that 5 minutes. Like, everyone was excited for it in the arena. I'm sure people were at home. I'm sure everyone was going mad on social, as probably you three were. And yeah, the crowd reaction to Brock winning was incredible. As I mentioned, I think it's probably 2 or 3 weeks ago now, it's the first time I've seen Brock smile properly. Like, he was loving it. Like, everyone was going mad for him. He was lapping up the attention after the bell rang, as we saw Brock Lesnar become Universal Champion. And the Monday Night Raw, obviously Goldberg came out and said bye-bye, brought his son out and whatnot. And then, yeah, now he's back.
Yeah, for me, I felt like it was a great redemption story to the absolute horribleness of that original match. I think the right guy won, because Brock Lesnar is actually a wrestler and can last more than 5 minutes. No disrespect to Goldberg, it's just that he just knows 4 moves, and those 4 moves are excellently done, but it can get a little bit boring sometimes. For me, I personally hoped that this would be the last time we'd see Goldberg in a wrestling ring, even though, as you mentioned, Crush, you alluded to, he would return, and once again, he kind of got his hands on the Universal title when he probably shouldn't have. But I still don't think that has a blemish on this whole little rivalry. It was something that was sparked out of, you know, initially, 2 guys were going to leave the company, so they didn't want either of them, despite being megastars, in a title picture, because the Smarks would have known who was going to win. Only for it then to be a really good selling point for the WWE 2K17 video game that year, which even I ended up buying. I think that was the first game I'd bought in a fair few years, because Goldberg was on the cover. I don't know, I just thought he'd be like the Ronaldo or Messi of it. I was wrong. He's not that good on it. But but yeah, I felt it was a very good, entertaining little feud for that few months that it went on. And I implore you guys to go and rewatch, maybe not the first match, but watch the little bits in between. Watch them face at Survivor Series. Watch that interaction at the Rumble. And then watch that Mania match, which, as Chris mentioned, it's 5 minutes, but it's bloody brilliant. It's just bonkers. It's just two big lads beating the crap out of each other. And that's why we love professional wrestling, is to see big lads beat the crap out of each other.
So that is it for this week's episode of the podcast. But tell us what you think. Who do you think should be Walters' first contender in the returning NXT UK? Could you have beaten me in the quiz? The answer is no. Did I actually win? It's up for debate, but I'm going to take the win anyway. Should Crush's awful, awful idea of inconsistent finishes go into room 101? If you say yes, you hate wrestling, it's your own fault. And who would you like to see his interview next? Don't forget, we have teamed up with WWE Euroshop for your chance to win a prize bundle that includes a Brahma Bull mini title, a Drew McIntyre shirt, a Bayley shirt, and an Undisputed Era water bottle. Get them while you can, before they split up, after Finn Balor becomes the new leader. I'm telling you now, get it in while you can. All you have to do is go onto Apple Podcasts, leave us a 5-star review, tell us what you think of the show, and leave your Twitter handle in there, and we will draw the winner at some point. Thank you so, so much for listening. We hope you've enjoyed it. Make sure you subscribe to our podcast on your favorite podcasting app so that you are the first to know when a new episode launches. And if you're on Apple Podcasts, make sure you leave us a review. We'd love to know what you think. Don't forget to check out the full Adam Cole interview with our very own Will on the Sporth Wrestling YouTube or wherever you get your podcasts from. That is it from us for this week. We'll see you next week. Now let's go home.